Thank you, Liz. Our next panelist is Robin Walls. Robin is professor of history at the University of Alaska Southeast. He's, of course, quite familiar at the Western Society. He is currently vice president of the Society, former co-editor of the Journal of the Society, on the governing board on several occasions. Robin is the author of Pulp Surrealism, Insolent Popular Culture in Early 20th Century Paris, which is almost due for its 20th anniversary edition, and a volume on modernism in the seminar series in history published by Routledge. He is engaged in a rocambolesque project entitled Shady Detectives, Elegant Criminals, and Dark Avengers, which is a cultural history of crime fiction in France from 1815 to 1950. And today, Robin's talk is on The Daughter of Fantômas, Belle Époque Action and Adventure Heroine. Robin.
Thanks, Michael. My many thanks to Joelle for pulling me into this session, and to Liz for joining in. This is my first foray into the realm of fictional representations of the Belle Époque New Woman, and I'm sure to make many gaffes and blunders, but still I hope you'll find this presentation informative and entertaining. Consider my insights those of a naïf, and I look forward to your comments during the discussion to guide me further. It works. I imagine it's not a secret to anyone in this room that for more than a quarter of a century I've been fou de Fantômas, the over-the-top and proto-surrealist crime series by Pierre Souvestre and Marcel Alain, featuring the arch-villain Fantômas, genius of evil and lord of terror, who orchestrates an endless succession of spectacular thefts, murders, and catastrophes. Pursued doggedly yet futilely by Sûreté Inspector Jouve and his journalist sidekick Jérôme Fandor, the ever-evasive criminal of a thousand identities continually foils the efforts and their efforts and evades capture over 32 multi-hundred-page novels in as many months, 1911 to 13. It's the kind of thriller series written for and primarily consumed by male readers, in contrast to the female readership of the Bibliothèque Rose of popular romance novels, as Anne-Marie T.S. has noted in her foundational study on Belle Époque readers of popular literature. One quarter of the way through the series, a new character was added to the core cast of characters, Hélène, the daughter of Fantômas. In this eighth episode, set in and around Durban, South Africa, Hélène is cached behind the cross-dressed identity of Teddy, who wears men's rancher's clothing and is an excellent horseback rider and a crack shot with a rifle. Ignorant of her parentage, she's been raised and protected by the superstitious and stereotypical black nanny, Leticia, who, upon Hélène's 16th birthday, delivers a letter that reveals Fantômas is her father, returned to claim her as his own. Coincidentally, Jouve and Fandor are in South Africa at the time in pursuit of the bandit. In the course of time, the journalist and Teddy form a brother-to-brother bond. When riding the horses in the countryside one day, Teddy takes a fall and is rendered unconscious, prostrate on the ground. Prostrate, that is. My prostate's been removed, so this is a Freudian slip. Prostrate on the ground. When Fandor unbuttons Teddy's shirt to revive his pal, he discovers ample breasts. Fandor is bouleversé, the resuscitated Hélène fâché, and the daughter of Fantômas leaps onto her horse and gallops off. Fearing her notorious father, yet feeling an innate filial loyalty to him, Hélène regards Jouve and Fandor as enemies, and she flees, leaving the thwarted duo behind at the end of the novel by uncoupling a locomotive engine and stranding them in the coal car. Now, women characters appear frequently in the Fantômas series, as they do in all crime adventure roman populaire of the era, but Hélène is an uncommon figure. In Fantômas, women are foremost the victims of the all-powerful, who steals their jewelry. In the example on the left, the necklace of the chloroformed Russian princess Sonia Danidov, or terrifies them with ingenious contraptions such as the maid on the right who's covered with blood and gore from offal-filled bombs set off in an employment agency. Beyond the threat of violence, women are murdered, such as the Baroness Valentine de Lescaut, whom Fantômas sends opium-laced black roses and later kills. Despite the ominous cover on the right of Fantômas emerging from under the bed with a formidable dagger in his fist, he does not, in fact, murder the sleeping woman. A different scene is described in the novel, in which the Lord of Terror is trapped under the bed of an adulterer and his mistress, and later sneaks out after the lovers have fallen asleep. In other instances, women are criminals. On the left, the fetching Bobinette, mistress of Captain Brock, steals French military plans for the Germans. La Mère Toulouche, on the right, retrieves a treasure box from the entrails of a cadaver in the cave of her low-life bar and delivers it to Fantômas' gang of apache henchmen. In contrast to these victims and criminals, or the principal recurring female character in this series, Lady Beltham, who is a highly suggestible and tormented mistress of Fantômas, Hélène is an action figure, a self-assured dissimulator who assumes various disguises and identity to evade and maintain her independence from Fantômas, Jouve, and Fandor. Beyond her Teddy alias, on several other occasions in the series, Hélène adopts male personas to escape the men in her life. As the cabin boy, Louis, on a barge, as Daniel, the valet of Danish art restorer Eric Sons, and as two different men in Le Jockey Masqué, as the victorious horse race jockey Cascadeur, and as Florestan d'Orgelais, the feigned lover of serial mistress Georgette Simoneau. When adopting female aliases, that's the emphasis, Hélène displays bold self-confidence and a commanding attitude, as horse trainer Mademoiselle Mogador in Le Train Perdu, for example, who has just taught circus owner Barzum a lesson about what he may or may not demand of her. Hélène is also at ease in the ranks of the aristocracy and high society. In the Le Fasseur de Rennes, she becomes Hélène de Meyenbourg, the niece of the Queen of Holland and the heir apparent to the throne through an arranged marriage. Thanks to the behind-the-scenes machinations of Fantômas, Hélène subverts her father's plans. Hélène easily passes among the bas-fonds of Fantômas' underworld henchmen as well, called the Red Wasp by the apache for her endearing and feisty personality as well as for her shapely figure. Hélène is also not beyond committing criminal acts, impersonating and blackmailing the amorous widow, Delphine Feijot, for example, in an effort to get the wayward woman to break off an affair with an illicit lover. Yet, over time, Hélène develops a passion for Fandor, and finally, in the 23rd novel, declares her adoration for him in a letter, "I love you. Be careful." As their love for one another grows, Hélène increasingly relies upon Fandor to get her out of jams. In L'Évêque de Saint-Lazare, Fandor helps her escape from prison on a trumped-up charge of murder. In La Cravate de Chanvre, when Hélène is unmasked as the false comrade Olga by a secret society of Russian nihilists, Fandor comes to the rescue. After her marriage to Fandor in La Fin de Fantômas, earlier in the series they were forced into marriage by Fantômas, who believed them half-brother and half-sister, wrongly so, it turns out, Hélène retains some of her pluck, but she ceases to be an action figure. In the final novel of the original series, Fantômas sets off an explosion in the Folie Française, leaving Hélène among the theater audience, seriously wounded. She is subsequently reduced to convalescence, first in a hospital, and then on the cruise ship Gigantic. When the ocean liner sinks in the Atlantic, due to the combination of Fantômas sabotaging the engine room and a collision with an iceberg, Hélène escapes on a lifeboat, leaving Fandor and Jouve behind. What are we to make of this fictional character, Hélène, the daughter of Fantômas? Impulsively, I leapt to the interpretation that Hélène is a proto-feminist figure, just as my previous reading of the series led me to assert that it was proto-surrealist. Even inchoate reflection showed me the notion is insipid. Still, Hélène seemed like a Belle Époque new woman of some sort, so I turned to Mary Louise Roberts' disruptive acts for guidance. Hélène certainly doesn't represent the 19th century liberal conception of womanhood. No matrimonial, maternal, or domestic sentiments here. While passionately in love with Fandor and finally marrying him, she spends most of the series giving him the slip to maintain her independence. Yet Hélène does not quite fit the new woman mold. While young, athletic, capable, defiant, clever, courageous, equally at ease playing feminine or masculine roles, she's not an educated intellectual, a frondeuse journalist with feminist view, or an aspiring professional. In fact, such women are ridiculed by Sylvestre and Hélène in the Fantomas series, most notably a character named Madame Alicette, who is the directrice of a fashionable literary review, Literaria. Neither is Hélène unruly, so much as she is energetic, an action heroine with a flair for the theatrical, played out on the boulevard crime pages of mass print popular fiction rather than upon the stage. Hélène commits disruptive acts throughout the series, subverting the male authority of Fantomas, Jouve, and Fandor. Yet, however subversive her activities, Hélène's performance of gender operates within a framework of patriarchal conservative values and fantasies of the fin de siècle, rather than openly challenging them. So, how to account for her character? Hélène did not spring fully formed from Zeus's forehead, much less Sylvestre and Hélène's. In the fashion of the historian's métier, I decided to trace Hélène's possible origins by regressing back in time to find female criminals and detectives with sympathetic traits to those of Hélène, beginning with the Memoir of Vidocq, which was published in four volumes, 1828 to 29. The fourth volume features Vidocq's triumph over Adèle d'Escars, a female prostitute leader of a criminal gang. That story, however, was entirely fabricated by Vidocq's ghostwriter, Louis-François L'Héritier, who lifted the entire plot and narrative from his recently published novel, The Misfortunes of a Liberated Woman. The liberated woman as criminal continues with the Masonic Order of Women, the La Franc-Maçonnerie des Femmes, by polygenre author Charles Monselet. Professional singer Mariana Rupert is in love with the ambitious, conceited, and rich dandy Philippe Bayle, who breaks off the relationship, resulting in the social ruination of the beautiful young woman. Some months later, the despondent Mariana is taken in by the beguiling Pandore, the grand mistress of the Masonic Order of Women, who inducts the emotionally wounded singer into the fold. With the motto, all women for one and one woman for all, the Masonic women mastermind the downfall of Philippe Bayle and similarly reprobate aristocrats and erstwhile bourgeois gentlemen. The independent woman criminal makes an appearance in the Self-Protection Against Criminal Types guidebook by private detective Eugène Viaud, How They Rob Us, How They Kill Us. The section on compromising love crimes, for example, explains the wiles of entaloues. These are women prostitutes who operate in concert, one rifling through the wallet of a client while the other preoccupies the John in bed. Adventurous women also play supplemental roles to criminals. While private detective Eugène Viaud is dressed as a hotel rat in the black bodysuit on the left, poised to bludgeon the sleeping woman with a sap, on the right, the diminutive hotel mouse uses burglary tools such as pass keys and an electric flashlight to steal the wife's jewelry from the commode, much to the horror of the frightened husband. Despite the title of Georges Lefort's book, these memories are not true crime stories, but a diverse collection of fictional crime and detective anecdotes, only one of which concerns this souris d'hôtel, who is assisting a male burglar. The modern woman who assists a man in criminal machinations takes center stage in the Maud novels by Antoinin Rechal, an author and magazine editor of diverse genres, ranging from humor and gastronomy to romance and soft porn. Maud is a young woman raised in the modern manner who is married to the Comte de Frégeville, an exemplary gentleman's club member but sexually impotent. Maud openly flaunts her liaisons with Jack Derville, a handsome and shiftless neurasthenic, raised in an immoral milieu of promiscuity, gambling, and low-life slumming. Maud's desire for Jack is fueled equally by the thrills of sex and crime. Here's a little extent, it gives a little taste of like how these read. Taking her by the waist, Jack continued to speak softly and suddenly gave her an almost brutal kiss. Caught off guard, the young woman savored the rough and slightly savage kiss and whispered excitedly, "The complicitous kiss, the link that unites the pimp and the girl, the thief and the prostitute." "Yes, dear Maud, the kiss that drives two wills toward the same ideal, the red sealing wax that locks together the secret of two lost souls." In Maud, Femme du Monde Cambrioleuse, she is the souris d'hôtel outfitted in a black bodysuit to Jack's burglary schemes, committing a string of hotel thefts across France, Italy, England, and Scotland, with sufficient suggestive repartee between them to stimulate the salacious imaginations of readers. In Les Derniers Exploits de Maud, Jack marries the naive and honest Lucienne de Villeneuve for her wealth. And Maud goes nearly mad with jealousy. She responds by taking up with other men and even flirts with the Russian princess Vainov without giving in to the latter's sapphic advances. At the end of the novel, Maud commits suicide by drinking poison. Grief-stricken, Jack bursts into the hotel room where her inert body lies when, miraculously, she begins to stir. Maud had only taken a concoction that suppressed her breathing and heart rate to undetectable levels. Proclaiming their love for each other, Maud and Jack set out on new adventures. End of novel. The year before Maud, Rechal tried his hand at creating a detective series to rival the new American hero detective fascicule weeklies, Nick Carter, the great American detective, and Nat Pinkerton, the most celebrated detective today. Published internationally in German, French, and English by Edition Eichler from 1907 to the outbreak of the Great War. Rechal's rejoinder was Miss Boston, the world's only woman detective. Miss Ethel Boston is an educated, athletic, and vigorous American private detective. American. In her first case, she solves the mystery of the murder of Sherlock Holmes at the Circus Hotel, organized by the diabolical chief of the Gang of 100,000 Arms. More a fantastical adventure detective than a logical crime solver, the intrepid Miss Boston rides the New York subway and drives a soundproof electric automobile, carries an electric flashlight and two revolvers, one in a holster, the other in her purse, bugs rooms with miniature microphones, and uses Y-ray machines to see through walls. While not exactly the world's first fictional woman detective, Miss Boston was the first one to appear in French, issued in 20 weekly fascicule by Rechal's usual publisher, Albin Michel, 1908-9. A more enduring female detective was Ethel King, the female Nick Carter, written or translated by Jean Petitouguenin and published by Edition Eichler in a 100-issue run, 1912-14. Like Miss Boston, Ethel King is a woman of action, astute, daring, physically fit. Although she also moves comfortably in high society, dresses elegantly, is seductive, charming, and intelligent. Both Miss Boston and Ethel King are professional private detectives from America, one in New York, the other Philadelphia, whose unconventional new woman attributes could be read by conventional French women without a threat to their own domestic social order. And then this genealogy brings me back to, ahead of myself. back to Hélène, who shares certain features with both the American New Woman and the French Femme Nouvelle, without really being either. Athletic, energetic, master of disguise, crack shot with a rifle, and ultimately siding with Inspector Juve and journalist Jérôme Fandor, Hélène can hold her own with Miss Boston and Ethel King. Practiced in deception and dissimulation, assuming multiple aliases, showing filial devotion to Fantomas for purposes of self-preservation and independence. As a criminal, Hélène is the granddaughter of Adèle d'Escars and the daughter of Maud, blending outlaw activities with romantic desire. Yet, she is also wholesome, honest in her way, as well as being unconventional. And I'm uncertain what to make of her as a new woman character. She's not Gyps Paulette, Prévost Etienette, or Ibsen's Nora. Rather, Hélène is a Belle Époque action and adventure heroine, a modern and independent woman, as conceived by two very male and typically bourgeois authors of popular fiction. The significance of her character continues to bewilder me. Quickly, to just show you, leave the last two slides, a couple other thick directions I could have gone but didn't. One was like, what about the afterlife of Hélène? After the original series, there's a bunch of Fantomas movies that have been made over the decades, but in two of them, Hélène character shows up, always supportive characters at Fandor's side, and always adventurous modern woman, a near post-war résistante, Simone Signoret there, and then a 1960s fashion figure for Mylène Desmongeaux. And then my other afterthought, another direction I could have gone, was Musidora, Jean Roch, as the vamp in Femme Nouvelle, Irma Vep in Les Vampires, and Diana Monti in Judex, the crime serials by Fouillade. But what's different here is that Musidora was an actual feminist, as some of you probably know, in her own right. She had her own film production company, Films Musidora. And anyway, those were like some afterthoughts, could have been other papers, but weren't. Thank you.